ॐ चिरञ्जस्य चिरञ्जन सलक चक्षुरञ्जन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 10. Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions, text number 21. Is that 21? Yeah.
Yadatmani niralokam
Atmanam cha didrikshata Nirvine ikshini ktasha Jyotishchakshu gunagraha. Any light, Atmanam, his own transcendental body. Cha, also other bodily forms. Didrikshataha, desire to look upon. Nirbhine, due to being sprouted. He, for. Akshini, of the eyes. Tasha, of him. Jyoti, the sun. Chakshu, the eyes. Gunagraha, the power of seeing. Translation. Thus, when everything existed in darkness, the Lord desired to see himself and all that was created. Then the eyes, the illuminating God's sun, the power of vision and the object of sight all became manifested. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The universe is by nature dense darkness, and therefore the total creation is called tamas, or darkness. The night is the real feature of the universe, for then one cannot see anything including oneself. The Lord, out of his causeless mercy, first desired to see himself and all the creation as well. And thus, the sun became manifested. The power of vision for all living entities became possible. And the objects of vision were also manifested. This means that the whole phenomenal world became visible after the creation of the sun. So we've heard how in text number 17 the Lord's 17 and 18. The living force being generated by the Virat Purusha generated hunger and thirst, and when he desired to drink and eat, the mouth opened. And text 18. From the mouth the palate became manifested, and thereupon the tongue was also generated. After this, all the different tastes came into existence so that the tongue can relish them. And Prabhupada refers in that verse these principles of, he explains in the purport, this gradual process of evolution suggests the explanation of the controlling deities, Adideva, because Varuna is a controlling deity for all relishable juices. Therefore, the mouth becomes the resting place for the tongue, which tastes all the different juices of which the controlling deity is Varuna. This suggests, therefore, that Varuna was also generated along with the development of the tongue. The tongue and the palate, being instrumental, are adibhutam, or forms of matter, but the functioning deity, who is a living entity, is adideva, whereas the person undergoing the function is adhyatma. Thus, the three categories are also explained as to their birth after the opening of the mouth of the Virata Purusha. The four principles mentioned in this verse serve to explain the three main principles, namely the adhyatma, adideva, and adibhutam. So, you know, previously we discussed those concepts. So that understanding there is important to, you know, keep in the back of one's mind as we go through all of these verses, because they're all based upon that those same principles as to the adibhuta, adideva, and adhyatma. So each time we read one of these verses, you can remember those three terms. So the adideva is demigod. So every time there is, you know, the various elements of the universal creation are being manifested, there is always a manifestation of the adideva or the demigod and adhyatma. What's that? Adhyatma. So it is the subtle senses. So it can be the self in that sense, but it can be the subtle senses, because the demigods, along with the manifestation of the demigods, then there can be the manifestation of the subtle senses which they control. And, you know, the adhyatma can also refer to the living entity as well. But when that spirit soul or living entity takes the form of a demigod, then they're specifically adideva. So you can say adideva and adhyatma can be the same thing in one sense, the living entity. But there is a distinction between, in other words, the when the adhyatma receives a set of senses, when the living entity receives a set of senses, which becomes their subtle self, they can be in the form of a demigod or the form of a living entity controlled by a demigod. In which case then one would be distinguished, one adhyatma would be distinguished as adideva. Otherwise, you know, there's essentially, they both have senses, subtle senses, they're both living entities. But, so the, but it is the adibhautik, or the physical body, which really distinguishes them, doesn't it? Because, you know, the demigods have senses, we have senses, all living entities have senses. They're all spirit souls in a material body with senses. But really the only distinction is one is a demigod and one is controlled by the demigod. So then the adhyatma in that sense can is sometimes specifically termed as adideva. And And then the here describes that the tongue and the palate being instrumental are adibhutam, or forms of matter. So, you know, what do we enjoy with our senses? With our senses, the subtle senses, we then get somewhere for the subtle senses to sit, and a platform where they can function. You know, so the subtle sense of sight will sit, you know, can utilize the eyeball to see, take advantage of the sunlight. And what then, because the senses then see things, then there is form. So the objects of the senses, are the subtle form of matter, which becomes manifest from the subtle sense of subtle senses. Because you can't have form, there's no form for the living entity if you can't see anything. But when the living entity, if you shut your eyes, how much form do you see? Everyone shut their eyes. Anyone see any form? There's nothing there. When the eyes are open, all of a sudden there's so much form. So it doesn't work in reverse. So one thing, you know, these adideva, adyatma, adibhutam are manifested, as they become manifested, then other things are possible. So they're interdependent. If you make a watch, the old-fashioned one, and they go tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. So, but therefore, once the watch is created and assembled, then we can have a tick tock sound. But that cannot be there until something's assembled. So, you know, the Adideva, the Adibhuta, the Adiatma, they each have their qualities, and, as they manifest in order, other things become possible. Whenever these various senses in the universal form are being manifested, these three principles are there. And so then we heard about the mouth and speech and taste, and the various demigods and senses and sense objects associated with that. And then there was the nose, etc. And today we're reading about the eyes. So Prabhupada says in the purport that, of course, the universe by nature is dense darkness, and thereafter, and therefore the total creation is called tamas, or darkness. The night is a real feature of the universe, for then one cannot see anything, including oneself. The Lord, out of his causeless mercy, first desired to see himself and all the creation as well, and thus the sun became manifested. So the sun, and of course, when we refer to the sun, it also refers to the sun god. And then the power of vision, or the subtle sense, become manifest. And then the objects of vision were also manifested. Like that. So, here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, one may question that, how do we apply or you know, what is the value for us of this type of you know, technical information about creation. And of course, we keep in mind, you know, what Sukadeva Goswami is doing here is that in describing creation, he's reminding us that ultimately everything is dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, specifically Krishna. The whole Bhagavatam, in fact, is establishing Krishna as the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And each and every verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam is dedicated to that cause. So they're very each verse is very important. And here in this section, you know, there's a lot of technical information which is sometimes, you know, not easily understood. You know, it can take, you know, many decades. You know, along you have to, you know, read these things again and again. You know, the beauty of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in this verse it describes here that the Bhagavatam is the answer to all questions. That if you become familiar with the Bhagavatam in the course of your lifetime, you will become a very expert person. One of the qualities of a devotee is that they're very expert. That is one of the qualities. Every devotee is supposed to develop these qualities, to be expert. Prabhupada defines expert, that expert means a devotee knows something about everything and everything about something. So how is that possible? If you read the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will know something about everything. If you come across anything within this material world, from the higher planetary systems down to the lower planetary systems, you know, regarding any subject matter, it's there in the Bhagavatam. But especially the essence of all things, the main things that we need to know. In Kali Yuga, shortcuts are recommended. Yeah, because not shortcuts that we do everything in a cheating way, but shortcuts means that, you know, we have to, we have very little time, you know, to, you know, in our life. And even if we live 100 years, the way Kali Yuga works is that within the course of each day of your life, you'll find that you have very little time for the, you know, for many things that are very important. You know, there is a Kali Yuga, everything is very chaotic, and people work, you know, too hard, you know, there's not a lot of time to spend, you know, studying deeply the Sanskrit and you know, the various, you know, so much technical information. So the best way to understand things and to learn things is to hear. That is the shortcut. You hear the main things that you need to know from the authorities. So we're hearing from Srila Vyasadeva. So Srila Vyasadeva, of course, he has studied all the Vedas, because he wrote down the Vedas, you know, in a summary form, especially meant for, you know, us in this Kali Yuga. He understood the nature of Kali Yuga. So just like, you know, if a parent is teaching a child how to cook, something. The parent, they know that the child, maybe, I was cooking when I was six or seven, I was cooking cakes with my mother. And, by the time I was 8 or 9 years old, I was cooking by myself independently. But, she didn't go into a whole, there was no lessons for hours and hours. There's 5 or 10 minutes here, 5 or 10 minutes there, and she showed me the main things I need to know. And you do that because they can point out, they've been cooking all their life. They know how to cook so many things. But they know that, this person is 7 years old, how much can I tell them? And a child, you start going, they want to cook a cake. And you start going into a half an hour description of the difference between Fahrenheit and centigrade, they're off jumping on the trampoline. You've lost them. If somehow or another they decide, I'm going to cook, while they've got a little bit of attention span, just give them the main things like that. And, it works. So Kali Yuga is like that. People have no attention span. To teach them the Vedas, and they're not going to do it. It takes 12 years just to study the grammar to be able to read the Vedas properly. Who's going to do that? So our process is we just, we hear from those who are very, very expert. They understand everything. And they'll just tell you, this is what you need to know immediately right now. And if you know that, you'll be okay. In fact, you'll be more than okay. And if you understand the Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll know the essence of all things. One of the qualities of Kali Yuga, of course, is that the essence of all things is lost. But it's there in the Bhagavatam. In Kali Yuga, if you have a friend, the friend, is in name only. That is here also in the Bhagavatam. In Kali Yuga, everything is name only. You have a mother or a father, it's name only. They do not perform the function of a mother and father. It's just by name you say, that is my father. Has your father performed any of the functions of a father apart from bringing you into this world? No. A mother, what sort of a mother, kills her child in the womb? Is a mother in name only. A mother nurtures and, nourishes and, raises a child. A mother kills a child, there's a mother in name only. So in Kali Yuga, and fruits. You get fruits these days, they don't even taste like fruits anymore. They taste like wax. They're not allowed to ripen up on the tree. So they pick them before they've actually grown because they don't care what it tastes like. They know that if it looks good in the shop, you will buy it. It doesn't matter whether it tastes like an apple or an apricot anymore. If it looks good, people will buy it. And after some generations, people even forgot what a real apple tastes like. As long as it looks good, people will buy it. So, the essence in Kali Yuga, the essence. But where can you find the essence? The essence is there in the Bhagavatam. Something. So Prabhupada says, to know something about everything. And everything about something. So, Prabhupada clarifies that everything about something means to be expert, especially at devotional service. And then, being expert at devotional service, devotees may, flourish in some particular services. They may be, all-round devotees in the sense that can do, you know, some deity worship, and they can cook. You know, Prabhupada says only a lazy man can't cook. But, you know, in ISKCON, but everyone can cook. You know, every devotee, men, women, even the children. You know, cleaning. Discussing Krishna consciousness philosophy, little kirtan, preaching, like that. And, you know, devotees have, they're somewhat all round, but they may have some particular areas where they become very, very, dedicated to some particular services which they, know practically, you know, that service inside and out very, very expertly like that. So as we know one thing about everything about one thing, and that's devotional service. That is the main thing. And to understand devotional service, we need to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. So in these verses, even if it takes 30 years, devotees will just hear these verses again and again until they understand it. That's the nature of devotees. Because if you understand these verses, just like Srila Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, Sri Goswami, you can establish that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You can talk to someone about anything. You can talk to someone about radio communications, navigation on the high seas, cooking muffins. You can talk to someone, fashion. You can talk to some people, politics, raising children. You can talk to someone about any subject matter, and they will understand by talking with the devotee how everything depends on Krishna. You know, we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He opened a school for Sanskrit, and every explanation he described the grammar it was explaining aspects of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So, even mathematics. You know, you can discuss mathematics with the devotee, and gradually you'll understand Krishna consciousness. Because, where does the mathematics come from? Mathematics means that. For instance, if you go back to some of the very ancient societies, such as the Phoenicians and, the very ancient societies there, in those days, if someone was a priest, it meant that they were also the expert mathematician, they're expert in geometry, architecture, astrology, astronomy. Because it's understood that how can you possibly be God conscious if you can't understand the laws of God? You know, this universe is actually manifested by certain laws which actually come from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Universe is manifested according to precise mathematical calculations. You know, the sun travels, you know, always 360 degrees, which is nicely divided by 12, and, you know, those divisions of 12, then can be divided by other numbers, 60, 9, like that. But And by understanding the mathematics of how everything is set up, you can understand how the planets are moving. And if you can understand how the planets are moving, you know, you can, just like people for thousands of years, they will plant their crops according to the movement of the moon. You know, when the moon is in certain positions and you plant your crops, the seeds will grow and flourish more easily. And, you know, certain, you know, movements of the sun, you know, you plant, and some things will not flourish at certain times, and according to, you know, the movement of the sun, other things will. And these things can be understood very scientifically, very mathematically. So as far as I understand the temple king, was it Solomon, who was a predecessor of David, the very famous temple for the Jewish religion. What's that? King Solomon, and then came David, and then came Jesus. In his, you know, that was designed, you know, and the mathematics and the architecture and everything was, you know, they brought in the Phoenicians and personalities like that who are very expert in mathematics and, you know, geometry and all those things. So they were the priests. The priests in those days were very expert at these things, at all these different things, because these sciences are all connected with the laws created by the Supreme Personality of God, by which he manifested the universe. So in one sense, you know, one is a priest, but has no concept of, you know, how God, you know, does things. No concept of the laws of God, what have you. You know, that is not very good. You know, therefore, we have, there are societies such as the Freemasons. And Freemasons, you know, if you, they're a society that basically, you know, if you go way, way back, originally they were somewhat God conscious, and they were interested in these sciences that come from, you know, these ancient societies, like, you know, the mathematics and geometry and architecture and everything that was used to build the temples and the churches. They were interested in that, and there was God consciousness. Gradually, the God consciousness has become lost, and now the even the science of architecture has been lost. I spoke to one architect, and of course, those who understand properly the mathematics and the architecture, because of, you know, studying the laws of God, their understanding of things is far better than even today. I was talking to one architect who, he was about 80-something years old, and he was saying that with all the modern science that they have now, they actually can't compete with the accuracy when they used to build the churches and you know, you know, temples and mosques. They can't compete with that. The accuracy. You know, even they have so much equipment, computers and everything, he was saying they actually can't quite compete with the accuracy they had in those days. And that science that they had was actually coming from their God consciousness and understanding, you know, they were God conscious and they studied the laws of God by which the universe was manifested. So actually, you know, previously it was like that. If you spoke to someone who was God conscious, you know, it didn't mean that, oh, you know, this person, they've got their head in the clouds, and they only know about Krishna, you know, or they only know about Jesus, they only know about, you know, Jehovah. You know, don't talk to them because they won't know anything. They're just going to tell you something from, you know, their scriptures, and, you know, they're really just so out of touch with the world, the real world like that. Actually, as far back in history as you go, if you wanted to know the people who were most in touch with being expert in this world, they were the priests, the God-conscious priests. And these days they look at it in the opposite way, that the people who are most out of touch with this world are the God-conscious people. Except for the Hare Krishnas. Except for the Hare Krishnas, because the people understand that the Krishna consciousness movement, you can approach the devotees on all matters. You know, it's not that one devotee is expert at everything, but as a society, and this is the wonderful thing about having a society, and we learnt this in the the disciples' course, that the wonderful thing about having a society, living in a disciple, is that you can draw from the expertise and the wonderful abilities of so many devotees. It's not that each person has to understand everything themselves. In that way, again, so for instance, sometimes someone may ask a devotee some question. The devotee, I don't know about that. But the devotee will go to the temple, they'll discuss with some devotees who do know that question, they'll hear from them, and then they'll go back to the person and they'll say, yes, this is the answer to that. In this way, actually a devotee, one way or another, can end up knowing practically, quite substantial things about everything. But it's all based upon, this Bhagavatam. There's so much in Bhagavad Gita. That there is so much information here. As we learn this information, a devotee becomes very expert. Because to live in this world as a devotee, you can't be a fool, I mean, if a devotee wants to create a lifestyle in which they have sufficient time to chant 16 rounds, to associate with the devotees, to visit the temple on a regular basis, to take on some service, it's not something for the elite. It's something for those who develop Krishna consciousness. You'll see that when people first come into contact with Krishna consciousness, if a devotee says to them, perhaps each day you can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra for 5 or 10 minutes, they'll think, where will I get the time? Sure. Oh my God. Yeah. Every day, it's impossible. They're thinking, oh, goodness, And then, what does figure? Well, you have to, every time you eat something, you've got to say some prayers, offer your foods. It's not possible. And they have that, but as they become, expert through hearing the Bhagavatam, they're able to, organize their lives in such a wonderful way that everything is being done in the easiest possible way, and they have unlimited time for serving Krishna, and they do that very nicely. And this of course you see in the seventh canto that is described originally the students, the young men, because in those Vedic times, would come and live with the guru, and everything had to be simplified. Their whole range of possessions was they could carry a bunch of kusa grass, which had various uses. They had a sacred thread. had a water pot, a deer skin, or a tiger skin, which means when you sit down or lay down, the snakes in the jungle won't come. A cloth, that was about it. Their hair, there was no, combs and brushes and things. If you had long hair, you just didn't, that's it. You just let it grow. Whatever it did, you just left it. So, or you cut it all off. But otherwise, you didn't really muck about with it. So everything was very, very simple. In this day and age, we can't do that. But the same principle is there. We can derive the same principle. Whether they're men or women who come to Krishna consciousness, it's the same principle. You can't imitate the brahmacharis of Vedic culture. But the point is this, that if you're Krishna conscious and you hear from the guru and you hear the Bhagavatam, you can learn how to simplify your life in such a way that everything is done very expertly in an uncomplicated way, and you have unlimited time for serving Krishna. So, the women may read that and they think, oh, here's this description in the seventh canto, the brahmachari. What relevance is that to anyone anymore? It is relevant. It's relevant to every devotee. There is nothing in the Bhagavatam that's irrelevant. It's relevant because we can learn, that principle. Okay, we can't imitate those exact things, but we can apply the principle to, in a Krishna conscious way, to learn the art of keeping everything in this world very, very simple and uncomplicated in such ways we have so much time. And we can spend our life and read the Bhagavatam until we do understand each and every verse in the Bhagavatam very expertly. We have so much time to, to read it and hear it and to discuss it, and we spend our lives doing that. But as one shouldn't think if we dedicate our life to understanding the Srimad Bhagavatam, somehow we will miss out on something. No, the fact is the opposite. If you dedicate your life to the Bhagavatam, everything else will be done 100 times better than the non-devotees. The same result will be there. 1,000 times less effort, 1,000,000 times less, material reactions. And at the same time, one becomes very expert in Krishna conscious and able to go back to Godhead through to him. So I'll just ask if there's any questions on this verse or this topic.
Taj Mahal.
Yes, yeah. That's right. Even the architects now look onto it with wonder. With all their technology. Yeah. And, just lasting the duration of time. On this point of expert, Prabhupada tells a story about the Taj Mahal. That when they were making the Taj Mahal, there was one of the labourers. He was, because to put on the marble and what have you, they make the mortar. So he was doing the mortar and, stirring and, like this. And, the foreman came and he said, you've been mucking about with that mortar for so long. For goodness sake, mix it up and put the tiles on. Like that. So, he got angry. And he got that mortar, he just threw it against the wall. Papa said, that mortar is still there. You can't get it off. Even the person putting the mortar on, they had it down to an they put buildings up now. You walk down the city and, things start falling off the buildings and kill people, But they put those things on that Taj Mahal, they're staying there, you know. They're not coming off. But we call them primitive. But, you know, expert, even just down to the person making the mortar. They understood. You know, there is a law, a principle, by which you mix things, and too much of something, too little of something, there is a mathematical proportion. And, you know, and a timing, you know, and you do things in a very, very expert way. And it's the same with making puris, you know. There's a certain, you know, most people add too much water, becomes a bit chewy. You know, you reduce the water, you get nice, soft, flaky. Yes, that's right. And, of course, you know, the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita, they teach us that we should do everything under the guidance of Guru. And Guru, of course, you know, in the sense of Diksha Guru, Shiksha Gurus, that everything is done. You know, so these are the lessons in the Bhagavad Gita. We see that Arjuna, although he was a very great warrior, it was only when he accepted Krishna as guru that you know, he was able to engage under Krishna's direction, use his talents and knowledge. In the service of Guru, who was Krishna, that he was able to properly apply, you know, his talents and understanding properly. And the Bhagavad Gita teaches us that we should serve, that everything is made successful by learning and utilizing what we have learnt by serving the Guru. That's, and that is also mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam throughout. So then there's that verse that Isha Dive Tata Guru. What's that verse? You know, Ita Dive Tata Guru. Ita Dive Tata. I'll read the translation anyway. The translation is that one who has implicit faith in both the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Spiritual Master, for them all the imports of the Vedas are automatically understood. So again, you know, that principle is there, that it's not an academic study that we're doing, you know, when we study the Bhagavatam, but we are, because we are trying to serve and please the Guru and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that our understanding of the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad Gita will become manifest. Otherwise, if we study Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita without that, trying to utilize that to please the Guru and the Supreme Lord, we will not get the realization. The imports of that those literatures will not manifest here. So there has to be practical application, and that practical application is to utilize everything to please Krishna and you know, the spiritual master. Like that.
He is in darkness. Everything is so as if that he wanted to see himself. So that is why the sun god was created. So in the darkness, he can't see himself. The process is different. It's different. Because we know from Mahavishnu, automatically the main sun god was created. Everything was created. It was not something the power was. It was saying there is a path was behind it. God cannot see himself in the dark, so therefore he created the sun and see himself.
Well, it's described in the Brahma Samhita that the sun, which is the eye of the Lord, and therefore Lord Brahma praises Govinda. And the sun is considered the eye of the Lord, and that Lord is recognized to be Govinda. So, we understand that Govinda exists before the creation of the universal form. So, of course, already he is seeing the universe, the universal creation, because he exists as Krishna or Govinda before. So he is seeing. But in his form as the universal form, you know, there is the pastime of not seeing. Just like, you know, Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu lays down on the causal ocean and he sleeps. It is a yoga nidra. It is not his yoga nidra is not like our sleeping. So even when he's sleeping, he's still fully conscious. And at the same time, he is sleeping. Here, the Virat Rupa is a manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his pastime, wanting to see, and at the same time he is seeing. Because he is Govinda. That verse is... he is Govinda. How can he not be seen? Mahavishnu is sleeping on the causal ocean. Does that mean that he is, you know, someone has to wake him up because it's time for creation, or, you know, all these universes have come out, he's supposed to be in there looking after them. Even he lays down in his yoga nidra, it is still here seen. So, you know, here the seeing is in terms of this material creation. So, you know, because what happens in the universal form, all of the Lord actually entered within the universal form, and in the universal form, all of the living entities within the entire universe are situated within the universal form of the Lord. So in other words, all the 14 planetary systems ultimately, and all the living entities who will inhabit the 14 systems, you know, are situated within the universal form of the Lord, and gradually all of those living entities get the ability to see. And all of those living entities, so, you know, it's described that the Lord has thousands and thousands of eyes and thousands of arms. Because each living entity is an expansion of the Lord himself, you know, his energy. In that sense, he is also, he can experience, you know, through them. They are also non-different. They're non-different from the Lord in the sense that they are manifested from him. They're not a separate manifestation. So, in one sense, when all living entities within the material universe have the ability to see, you know, it is, you know, it's like the entire universal form is seeing. So, you know, the universal form is the, you know, external manifestation of the whole material creation, all living entities within it. And contains all the jivas. So, you know, that means that when he sees, all living entities see, because they are within that universal form. But we should also understand that he exists separately as Govinda, Krishna, which we said this is what Sukadeva Goswami is ultimately going to show us. And he is always seen. And, you know, there's that pastime with was it Radharani, who, you know, didn't open her eyes until, you know, they brought Krishna. So she was also, she wouldn't see anything. She took, you know, appeared in this world and she wouldn't see anything in this world until they brought Krishna. Then she saw. Does that mean that Radharani, you know, could not see? So these are, you know, they're pastimes in order for us to understand, you know, certain principles. And although the Lord can perform that pastime of not seeing, simultaneously he can see. So while Radharani is a little baby, she's simultaneously not seeing. She cannot see anything. At the same time, she is eternally Radharani. She's always seeing. She's, you know. So they're pastimes. Understood in that way. But the main point is that unless the Lord sees first, then we will not see. Until he sees, we cannot see. That's the point that we take. And therefore he has to demonstrate. First I will see, then you can all see. That's the main point that he's saying. So temporarily he's performing the pastime that I'm not seeing, therefore no one can see. And then in his pastime he says, now I will see, now you can all see. And that. All right, thank you. Hare Krishna.